I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. Spring training is done, and it's a big day for big leaguers. Baseball fans all over the metro are excited for opening day. Today, we're live from the Diamond Club in Kauffman Stadium, where in just a few hours, the Kansas City Royals embark on their 2018 season. There's been a lot of changes to the roster this year, and we'll get a review of those. Then we'll take you behind the scenes here and find out what's new from the grounds crew to the concession stands. We'll also check in on the Royals Urban Youth Academy down at 18th and Vine. They're giving young athletes in the inner city a great new place to play ball. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Welcome to Kauffman Stadium in the 2018 season for the Kansas City Royals, the team's 50th anniversary year. I wish it was a more beautiful day for a ball game, but we'll make it through. We're coming to you live once again this year in an up-to-date tradition from the Diamond Club, high above home plate, just hours before the Royals take the field for the first pitch of what will be another 162-game season. This is supposed to be a day of unmatched anticipation, but Royals Nation is in a bit of a slump today following the news that All-Star catcher Salvi Perez tore a ligament lifting a suitcase yesterday, and he'll be out for several weeks. We begin with a look at the 2018 season and what that loss of Salvador Perez will mean for this team. Joining me here in the Diamond Club, Greg Eklund, cover sports for KCUR. Greg, it's always good to have you.
Good morning, Steve.
Steve Fiziak is in his seventh season with the Royals and will serve both as a voice on the Royals radio network and as a play-by-play broadcaster on Fox Sports Kansas City. He's also releasing his first novel this April, The Walls of Luca. Steve, welcome back. So good to have you here.
I didn't know you'd promote the book this early. I thought we'd talk baseball first and then get to my hobby.
Tell me about The Walls of Luca. Why not? Give me a quick
glimpse. I'll start with baseball because I've always been interested in team building. What took place in 2014 and 2015 was amazing with Kansas City, how young men left their ego in the locker room and came out and played together. And it's amazing what can be accomplished when no one cares who gets the credit. And I thought, can we do that within our communities, within our families, within our relationships? So in a sentence, it's basically a spiritual woman helps break down the barriers that separate two families trying to produce a great Sangiovese wine during Italy's darkest times, World War I, the rise of fascism, and Mussolini. There's a sequel that will come out in the fall, and it begins in 1938 after Mussolini's Manifesto of Race all the way to the end of World War II. But it's not only historical fiction, but it's a love story between the characters. But it's how you come together as a family, as a vineyard, and much like baseball, how you come together, individuals, to find success on the field. So I've always been interested in team building, and that's why if our fans out there are interested, they could go to the Steve Fiziak author Facebook page and like it, or go to Amazon.com and just Google in Steve Fiziak, The Walls of Luca.
Well, that's Steve Fiziak, broadcaster turned novelist. We'll see how many more years he has with the Royals once he hits the bestseller list here.
I love baseball.
Well, Greg, let's go to you here. You don't want to take a negative outlook on opening day, but let's get real here. No Salvi for perhaps the first 2 months of the season due to those torn knee ligaments. The team already was looking at maybe an uphill climb this year. How much does Salvi's injury hurt?
Your outlook is real. I mean,
sad to say.
You know, you're already taking a portion out of the lineup when you lose the guys that tested the waters and signed with other teams as free agents. And I'm speaking of Eric Hosmer and Lorenzo Cain. And even as you do pick up guys like Lucas Duda and bring back Mike Moustakas, when you have a guy like Salvador Perez who is going to be in the heart of the lineup and counted upon to be producing much of the offense generated this year, that is a big void in the lineup when he's out for 6 weeks or 4 weeks.
You know, Steve, the season hasn't even begun yet. How can you put a positive spin on something this tough?
I'm going to put a positive spin on it because in the past, Salvi has played so many games during the season that in the second half, his offensive numbers are not as productive as he'd like to see them. And here's a guy who may miss 4 to 6 weeks, maybe a little longer, but I truly believe in the backups. I think Drew Butera is one of the better backups in baseball. I think Cam Gallagher is very underrated. I think Salvi can help them in their preparation and also their enthusiasm and cheerleading. So hopefully we can survive. And then in the second half, when you get Salvi back in there hitting fourth, because you want him fresh. And so it's going to be all of the above. I thought Dayton Moore did a marvelous job in the offseason addressing the problems we were going to have when we needed productive left-handed bats after losing guys through free agency. And he goes out and gets John Jay and Lucas Duda and then re-signs Mike Moustakas, who I think is going to have a fantastic year. I like this, and every year there are going to be challenges. Unfortunately, it faces us on opening day not having one of the great catchers in baseball there for a month and a half.
You know, Greg Eklund, Salvi is a perennial Gold Glove winner. He's an all-star. You know, why does he mean so much to this team?
Well, it's not just the numbers that you see on paper when he hits homers and produces a batting average, but with the way he handles pitching from behind the plate, the way he blocks balls that prevents runners from advancing a base. He does everything behind the plate to almost engineer the flow of the game when the pitchers are on the mound. He does everything but throw the ball, but he's the guy behind there that the pitchers rely on.
And the pitchers count on him, Steve. I mean, you hear all this talk about a catcher who can handle a pitching staff. What does that mean?
Well, I'll give you an example. Danny Duffy, who will start today, has been friends with Salvador Perez since he was 18 years old. And he said, Salvi is like my brother. He knows me inside and out. He knows what's working, what's not working. If my fastball is cutting too much, or if my changeup, or I'm opening up too soon, he may touch his front shoulder, letting me know that, hey, I'm opening up too soon. That's why the ball is getting up. So when you have that relationship, and what is Danny? Danny's known Salvi for over a decade. And so that's going to be the challenge, but that's why I go back to the guys I truly believe in Drew Butera and Cam Gallagher. They're more than capable backups. They have been involved every single moment. I know the staff believes in those young men, and I think if we can just keep our heads above water until Salvi comes back, I think we'll have success.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR, and we're coming to you live from the Diamond Club this morning, high above home plate. The Royals are on the field. We haven't seen the White Sox yet, but they're running sprints in the outfield. They're hitting, taking batting practice here behind home plate, and the 2018 season is starting to take shape here. You know, Greg, we just ran through spring training. The Royals finished in the top half of the American League. They were 16-13. What does that record suggest about the prospects for this team, or does it suggest anything?
In my opinion, it suggests nothing at all, because sometimes a team can be the most successful team record-wise in spring training, but when it doesn't translate into the regular season, it doesn't mean anything. You don't know what pitchers are working on, if they're experimenting with a new pitch or something. You don't know what guys, besides getting into shape, are working on, because those games really don't count. And when the bell rings, that's when we'll find out. I think, in my opinion, seldom does what you see in spring training carry over into the regular season.
I was going to say, it never seems to matter. Am I right, Steve, that spring training is just an exercise you go through before you start getting serious here
when you
on
play
opening day?
In Arizona, I don't put a great deal of value in offensive numbers, but I do in pitching numbers. And what I saw from Jake Junis in spring training was outstanding. I think he had one walk versus 20 strikeouts, his ability to command his pitches low down in the strike zone and get a lot of ground ball outs, a lot of strikeouts, and also what I saw, the improvement of Eric Skoglund, who appears to be moving into our starting rotation because of the injury to Nathan Carnes, and Carnes will be out for a short time because of tightness in his elbow. But Eric Skoglund looks bigger, stronger, commanding his fastball better. I saw a better breaking ball. I think he had zero walks and 11 strikeouts, if memory serves me correctly. So those are the things that I, as a broadcaster following our team, look for in spring training. Okay, how is a guy commanding his fastball? Is he locating it where he wants to down? Is the catcher moving his glove? And I thought what I saw from young pitchers like Jake Junis and Eric Skoglund was very impressive.
Thing. Okay, again, not trying to be a downer here or anything, Greg. Sports Illustrated just forecast that the Royals will finish 63-99 this season, 35 games behind the Indians and in last place in the American League Central. I mean, ouch, right? You buying that?
I don't very often buy what Sports Illustrated
projects. Oh, come on. It's Sports Illustrated, Greg. And I subscribed to it for 30 years.
I think they
years,
were a little bit off when the Royals won the division title in the World Series in 2015. I think they were also off in 2014 when the Royals got to the World Series for the first time. No, I don't think I mean, there are a lot of question marks on the Royals. But I think if there is a team in the division that has more question marks than the Royals, I would have to say the Detroit Tigers, mm-hmm. because they unloaded a lot of their high-salaried players, and they still have some on the payroll that they'd like to unload. So I think there's more of a rebuilding process going on up in Detroit than there is here in Kansas City.
Steve Fisiak, the SI forecast, 63 wins, 99 losses. What do you say?
I give no credence to a forecast, and I'll give you a reason. In 2014, we finished 90 feet away from tying that Game 7 against the San Francisco Giants and winning our first World Series since 85. I go to spring training, and I'm in the Kansas City airport, and I pick up a baseball magazine. They picked us fourth. And I go, good. Our guys are going to have a chip on their shoulder. And I got to spring training, and they did. They read the same magazine and other magazines that picked the Royals fourth in their division. And, of course, they go on to win the World Championship. There was a focus, a determination, a esprit de corps on that 15 team that's incredible. Obviously, we didn't have many injuries. But I put nothing in forecasts because they mean nothing, because you have no idea who's going to be healthy in September. Or much like the Royals suffered today, an injury to Salvador Perez.
You know, Greg, why is baseball so utterly unpredictable? Maybe not completely, but compared to other sports, basketball, the NBA particularly, pro football, what's the deal?
Well, I think all the predictions come out based on what you think that you're going to have in April. But what you have in July is, more often than not, a complexion of change. You have teams that hardly look like the same team that they were in April because of unexpected minor leaguers who come in and surpass what the expectations are, or, as Steve mentioned, guys who get hurt. There are so many unpredictable factors through the course of a baseball season that teams are different in the second half of the season than they are in the first half.
I'll give you an example. Pecota has never liked the Royals, the Pecota rankings. And
what are the Pecota rankings?
Well, they list basically numbers, offensive numbers, pitching numbers. But they were talking about the Royals, and the defense that they gave was, you know what, our the way we grade, it's very difficult to evaluate defense. And the Royals have a very good defense. And it's very difficult to evaluate a bullpen, and the Royals have a very good bullpen. And it's very difficult to put numbers on chemistry, and the Royals have very good chemistry. I'm thinking, those are three very important things to success, baseball success. And the Royals in 14 and 15 had the best defense in baseball, the best bullpen in baseball, and I'll put their chemistry up against any team because we finished last in home runs and last in walks,
right,
and won the World Championship.
You know, before our broadcast today, Steve, you were telling me that Dayton Moore, the general manager for the Royals, he insists on team first, that kind of attitude, that kind of esprit de corps that he wants to see in the clubhouse. How does he, can a general manager demand that and then actually get it?
I think there's conviction in Dayton Moore that's very rare. There was a great article written by Joe Posnanski, a former Kansas City Star writer, and Joe's quote from Dayton was, "I just want the young men to be good husbands, to be good fathers, to be good teammates, to be good in their community." He goes, "If they do those things, the baseball will follow them." And I think the same thing is true with team sports. If you put the teams first instead of yourself, it's amazing how individual success just naturally follows. And Dayton has done a great job building success and obviously winning a world championship, but now he has to do it over again. But what he has done, the young men he's acquired in the offseason are one-year deals, and that allows the young men in our minor league system to develop at their time. That way we don't have to force a Ryan O'Hearn or a Frank Schwindel before their time. And I thought Dayton did a marvelous job. And I think he also wanted to let his team know, the guys in our clubhouse, that I'm not giving up on you. I'm going to compete to try and get the best team possible to compete in the American League Central this year, rather than this rebuild mode that some people talk about. Dayton Moore is not about rebuild. He's about competing every single day.
We're coming to you live from the K, and we're previewing the Royals' 2018 season. Greg Eklund, let's talk about the offense for this team. Who's going to carry the team this year? What do you expect?
Well, I think with the long ball threat that they have between Moustakas and Duda, I think those are the two guys that you would expect to carry the offense in the heart of the lineup. Is Moustakas, where is he batting today in the batting order?
I have not seen it, but I believe it'll be third. Obviously, with Salvador Perez out there, it'll mix things up because Ned does like to give balance in the lineup where he goes left, right, where you can't box the team with a left-handed reliever.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Moose is going to have a marvelous year. I really just think
why
he
do
understands
you? I mean,
his
you know,
offense.
Here he was, this big free agent prospect. It didn't work out for him. He comes back to the Royals on a one-year deal, making far less money than people thought he was going to make this year after hitting a team record number of home runs last year. What's his mood, his morale, his attitude heading into this season? Because he'd have a lot of reasons to be sort of thinking, the heck with all this.
Yes, but that makes you bitter. And as my mom used to say, when I'd make a mistake or I'd fail, whether it was in sports or life, she'd go, bitter or better, what's it going to be? And with Mike Moustakas, I thought his energy was fantastic in spring training. I mean, his first game, he gets a two-run single. His second game, he hits a home run. And he has such a quiet approach and confident approach. And I think, I know nothing about it, and I will not talk to Mike because his negotiations are personal. But I will bet you that he said, get me into a ball club, and told Scott Boras, and start negotiations with the Royals. And the Royals were able to cut a deal with him. But here's a young man that really understands his game, and I think he's going to have a terrific year.
Do you buy that, Greg?
I do. I think he still has a lot to play for because he's on a one-year deal, and I think that will drive him. He is always driven to have his teammates excel. I mean, the famous scene in the Houston when the Royals were in the playoffs and on the brink of being eliminated from the 2014 playoffs. Moustakas was one of the spiritual leaders in that dugout at that time that helped rally the Royals to not only win that series against the Astros, but boost them to the World Series. And I think he'll take on that role that really, whether he likes it or not, it's on his shoulders now. But he's in a leadership role now.
Greg Eklund, give me a quick evaluation of the pitching prospects for this team.
Well, Steve mentioned one of them, Skoglund. We saw a little bit of him last year in the classic game that he came up with. He's on the mound, and Justin Verlander's on the mound for the Detroit Tigers, and Skoglund outpitches Verlander. We didn't see much of that after that game, but I think it showed that this guy has got some stuff, he's got some poise, and if he, once he gets his feet wet like he did last year and gets more experience and gets puts a little bulk on his body, that he's a young pitcher that that may surprise us. I think Junis, I really liked what Junis did at the end of last year, and I think he's another pitcher who will become a name for himself.
So this staff might surprise Steve?
Yeah, I'm not as – I don't have as many question marks about the starting rotation now that Nathan Carnes is on the DL, Skoglund moves in. But I'm more concerned about our bullpen because there's a lot of talent there, but it's young and inexperienced. And they have to prove themselves. And the Royals' success in 14 and 15 was about somehow get a tie game or the lead to this unbelievable bullpen of Greg Holland, Wade Davis, Kelvin Herrera, Luke Hochaver, Jason Fraser, Ryan Madsen, on and on. These guys right now don't have the names. They have the stuff. Bert Smith throws 100 miles an hour. So we shall see, but they've got to prove it.
Okay. I want to thank our guests here, Steve Fizziak, the longtime Royals broadcaster, and Greg Eklund, who covers sports for KCUR. Greg, always great to have you. Steve, thanks very much. Sure appreciate it.
You're welcome, Steve.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Again, if you're just joining us, we're coming to you live from the K and the Diamond Club. We're above home plate here, watching the Royals take batting practice out here. Still haven't seen the White Sox here today. The Royals have first dibs on the field as they get ready for the 2018 season here. Well, we couldn't do an opening day show without reviewing the latest food and drink offerings at the K. And as always, there are some new items to consider here. Joining me now is Jeremy Danner. He's an ambassador brewer with Boulevard Beer. And Jeremy, it's nice to have you. Welcome.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, good. And John Wojcik, executive chef at Kauffman Stadium, will be joining us here in just a couple of minutes, we hope. Okay. Well, Jeremy, this season you're unveiling a new Mexican-style lager. It's called Vamos. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so when we became the official craft beer of the Royals last year, we had the opportunity to make a brand new beer to celebrate that partnership and celebrate the team, and we really took our time to get the beer right and make sure we had the right beer. So we're unveiling it this year at the beginning of the season, and it's a Mexican-style lager, so brewed similar to like what you might get from a Corona or a Dos Equis. But the idea is the Mexicans actually learned how to brew from the Germans and the Austrians, and then these styles developed to be very light and crisp. So we wanted to make a beer that made sense to be consumed at a baseball game, but also we wanted to be respectful to the Latin American history of baseball and that tradition and make a beer that we felt baseball players would actually drink.
Well, it's good. It's got a little depth to it, too. This is not just a light beer like a Coors. This is something a little more substantial than that, I think.
Yeah, so we used about half Vienna malt, half Pilsner malt, and then we used a fairly new German hop called Hauertau Blanc that contributes a bit of a like a citrus melon tropical fruit character to the beer. So it's definitely not a throwaway beer. No, it's a beer that we're very proud of.
Oh, why did you want to do a new lager for the 2018 season? What was the thinking behind that?
Well, we wanted to make something that was at home at the ballpark and kind of paired well with being outside, not just for baseball, but being outside as the weather turns warmer. And, you know, while we enjoy making crazy barrel-aged stouts and, you know, heavy sours, it just made sense to go for something that was very crisp and refreshing and something that we felt had a little bit wider appeal than maybe some of our more esoteric, you know, thinky beers.
Well, the up-to-date crew is taking its first sips of this new lager-style beer from Boulevard. It's again, it's called Vamos. In your press materials here, you describe this beer this way, Jeremy. Flaked maize and equal parts Pilsner and Vienna malts are balanced by a subtle but distinctive hop character, making for an enticing, easy drinking beer. Whoever strung those words together deserves a pay raise.
That was me.
Was that you?
Yeah, that was me.
Was
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
That's quite a description.
Yeah, part of what I do is in addition to representing the beer, I also do a lot of writing about our beer to introduce it.
Yeah.
And I want people to take a drink of the beer and read what we've written about it and say, you know, I get exactly what they said the beer was.
Well, Luke Martin, one of our assistant producers here at Up to Date, has taken a sip of Vamos here and is ready to render his judgment of it here live on the radio. Luke, what'd you think?
Well, I think it's good. I mean, it's a little early in the day for me usually to be dipping into beer.
Not for you, Lou. Come on. Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, it's very good. Like you said, it looks like you could drink, I don't know, like six of these in a setting. But when you put it in your mouth, you definitely want to take your time with it because it's got a little bit of a sharp, bitter taste to it, which I'm not used to with beers that look like this.
Yeah, it's only 20 IBUs, but it is enough bitterness that you get balance. It's not just malty sweetness, and it's not just it's not beer flavored water. You know, I think some beers that are like super refreshing, there's nothing wrong with that, don't really taste like much. So we wanted to make a style that kind of bordered on that, but was still very much a craft beer and something that, that we as Boulevard could be proud of.
Well, that was a level of articulation that I haven't known coming from you in the past, Luke. I was impressed.
It must be the beer.
Already this morning.
We need more of this at the station. Yes.
Well, let's get Kathleen Pointer to take a seat here just real quickly, Kathleen, and render your judgment on Vamos, this new lager from Boulevard. What do you think?
You know, I am not the biggest sports fan in the world, but I think I would come out to Kauffman Stadium and have some drinks of this beer to, while I'm watching the game. So
yeah,
I would say yes, for sure.
Okay. We're joined now by John Wojcik, who's executive chef at Kauffman Stadium for Aramark and the Royals. And, John, it's nice to have you. Thanks for taking some time.
Thanks for having me.
Now, I'm told that there's going to be a wide range of dogs for fans this year. I'm talking hot dogs. What are you thinking? What do we got going?
Well, in some of our restaurants, we have a mac and cheese chili dog. It's made with a burn-in chili. Very delicious. It's in Rivals and in Diamond Club, sorry. And then right out here at Gate D, we have the Dog Father, which is a new corporate sponsorship. They've got it's a butter-grilled, like New England-style bun, nice and hearty. And it's a natural casing hot dog. We've got one of them has beans on it, one has chili, another one has mac and cheese, some candied bacon, just really good stuff.
Where do you come up with this stuff? I mean, would you sit around and just taste stuff all off season and figure something out?
Yeah, you figure out different taste profiles, and then you talk with all your other chefs that are in the building, in your area, in your network, you know, and just throw ideas off each other, and then lots of taste testing.
To what extent is cholesterol levels a factor in what you come up with here?
When it comes to hot dogs, it's out the window.
You're not going to consider that at all, are you?
No.
You've also managed to work fish onto the menu. How is that going to be served?
Yes, so we have a grilled fish taco out in Rivals. It's marinated in some lime juice, salt, pepper, oil. It goes on the grill, and then we spread it between three flour tortillas. It comes with a mango avocado salsa, some pico de gallo, queso fresco. Very tasty, nice and fresh.
That sounds a little more down my alley.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty good. And Sweet Tooths everywhere are going to have going to love what's being done with cookie dough here at the K this season. What are you doing there?
Yeah, so we have an edible cookie dough. It has no eggs in it, and we actually toast the flour, so it's like shelf-stable, if you will. And we have two different flavors always on the menu, chocolate chip, and then we have peanut butter, and then we're going to have an array of flavors the whole year.
Now, just give me a sense here, Jeremy, to what extent is the beer going to mesh with the new food offerings out here?
I mean, I think Vamos, given that it is a fairly simple style, well, when you have a lot of flavor going on in a dish and you're trying to match intensity, sometimes you can't do that, so you go with something very simple. But when you talked about the fish tacos, I think of Tropical Pale Ale. That's another beer that we make that is it's available in craft and draft, and it's infused with grapefruit peel and juice and passion fruit juice at the end of the brewing process to play with the tropical fruit character you get from the hops. So I like to match up flavors as well, and you can do contrasting flavors, comparing flavors, and then when you have something that's so complex, you go simple.
Well, Reason to Live, number 405 here in Kansas City this year. Come out to the K and try the new drink, try the new food. I want to thank Jeremy Danner. He's with Boulevard Beers. He's an ambassador brewer. And John Wojcik, he's executive chef at Kauffman Stadium. Thank you both for taking some time. I sure appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
You bet. Time for a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to the Hall of Fame director here for the Royals. We're going to talk about that new Urban Baseball Academy, and we'll take a look out in the field and see what our boys in blues are doing to get ready for this sparkling new season. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we are back. I'm Steve Kraske, live from the K today for opening day of the 2018 season. Yesterday on the show, tips from the children's health experts and how to prepare your family for outdoor summer fun. You can hear that conversation and others at kcur.org/uptodate. Tomorrow we look at the future of school finance in Kansas. Lawmakers will share their responses to a recent consultant's report calling for big increases in education funding. I hate to disappoint you, but Brian McTavish is not joining us here at Kauffman Stadium with the weekend to-do list this week, but you can still find his six bold things to do in Kansas City this weekend. Just go to kcur.org. Well, again, we're coming to you live from the K this morning on this opening day of the 2018 season. As always on these opening days, we take a look behind the scenes, and now we're joined by Trevor Vance. He's the head groundskeeper here. And Trevor, welcome back. Always good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
How do you get these perfect stripes and designs into the turf? Because the field, as it always does on opening day, looks just terrific.
Well, I'm blessed. I have a very talented crew that takes great pride in what they do, and they've been cutting these stripes for years, so to cut a straight one's really not that hard at all for them.
How do you do it? What's a tip for a homeowner who might want to bring that home to the front yard?
Well, I mean, we have specialized mowers that are geared more towards golf courses that are real mowers instead of rotary mowers that have rollers on them that after you cut the grass, it actually rolls it in one direction. But I would tell the homeowner, you know, follow the street one direction, follow maybe your driveway the other direction to get the checkerboard look.
Yeah.
But if you're not rolling the grass down, you're really not going to, the tires will roll it down, but the mower itself's not going to give you that stripe.
Do these guys get it right the first time, every time, or do they have to redo these things as you look at the field from a vantage point like where we are here in the Diamond Club today looking down on the field?
Well, the very first cut of the year is not straight. I mean, it takes them a couple stripes to get it zoned in, but by the time they come back and cut it the second time, they usually got it straightened out. And
are they aiming at something to get the stripe straight, or how does that? How
well,
do
this pattern's beneficial because you get to follow the foul lines. So if your first line's straight, if your foul line's straight, which they better be in the big leagues,
yeah,
then your first mowing path's straight. Then all you got to do is follow that and get yourself across the ball field.
Yeah, and how long does it take them to do the whole field?
Oh, that's probably an hour 20 minutes right there to mow it, catch all the clippings, and clean up afterwards.
You pick up all the clippings, obviously.
We catch clippings all the time, yes.
Yeah. You know, summers are getting hotter and drier, Trevor. Springs staying cooler and wet. How do you find a grass that handles both?
Well, here in Kansas City, we're in the transition zone.
Right.
Which means we can get as hot as Texas and as cold as Minnesota, yeah. So there's not an ideal grass for Kansas City. Bluegrass is great in March, April, May, 1st of June, September, October. The warm season grasses of Bermuda are great in July, August, 1st of September. So you kind of got to pick which one you want to deal with. We've had a lot of success with the bluegrass. We have to give it a little more attention in June and July and first part of August, but you're going to be challenged no matter what you decide to do in Kansas City.
You obviously can't change grass midway through the season, even for those hot summer months, can you?
We have changed the infield in the past, and we're not afraid to do it. It's become such a simple process that if a team goes out of town, we'll take the bluegrass out of the infield and bring in Bermuda and play on it a week later.
How do you take it out?
We just sod cut it out, and then the new sod comes in and rolls that are 4 feet wide by 100 feet long. So the weight of that roll keeps the sod down, and it'll take off and root great in the summertime.
No kidding. Well, in the off season, are you researching the latest in grass, you know, varieties for something that might, you know, use a little less water and tolerate the heat down the run?
We're always looking at ways that we can get ahead of it. This sod right here, when we did our field renovation last fall, we replaced all this. This sod was actually grown on plastic. So when it was time to harvest it and they rolled it up, you did not have the harvest shock and you didn't cut the roots off. So they already had a deep root system developed that once we laid it out here, those roots just shot down into the sand, and we've got probably one of the deeper root systems we've ever had.
Do you worry about it? Is this something you go home at night and worry about how the grass is doing out of the K?
Oh, this is like another child. Yes.
Really?
I mean, it can be temperamental. I mean, there's so many variables we can't control, weather, traffic, events, we got to stay on top of this thing because it can go south in a hurry.
If it goes south, what causes it to go south?
Well, it could be
too much water.
It could be too much water. It could be too much traffic.
That's interesting.
It's a challenge. The heat. I mean, too much water usually means you got to tarp too much, and when you tarp too much, that creates a lot of disease underneath the tarp, and that can wipe out your field also.
Wow. How big is your groundskeeping crew?
We have a core of six guys that we count on throughout the year, and then we add on as the summer, we get college help back and everything to kind of ease the hours and everything. But we'll run about 14 guys throughout the summer, six to eight during the spring and fall. And then nighttime, we run 18 guys on the tarp crew.
Will the players themselves, Trevor, will they stop you and say, hey, something seems a little wrong in this one spot in the infield, the ball's not hitting it right? Do they talk to you about it?
Oh, absolutely, because in reality, the baseball players are the only tool we have to gauge our success. I mean, from up here, the place looks great, but is it playing well? And the only way we know if it's playing well is by players' feedback.
And they'll tell you?
Oh, they're not afraid to tell you.
And they'll say what to you?
You know, it's a little hard. Can we add more water to the dirt?
Really?
The grass is starting to snake a little bit. The ball's snaking out in the outfield. And there's a lot of things we can't
see. The ball's snaking. What does that mean?
Well, if you constantly cut the grass in the same pattern, the same direction all the time, your grass really starts to lay down. And when the ball rolls out to an outfielder, it'll look like a snake. It won't be a straight line.
Huh.
So, you know, we got to keep an eye on that. That's why we always try to cut two directions to eliminate that. But we've had a challenge with it this spring because the grass is not dried out in probably 7 days with all the moisture and everything. So every time we mow, we're laying it down a little more just because it's tacky. So we're really hoping for sunshine. We can get a good clean cut on it tomorrow and be in great shape.
And so right now is a good chance, a good time for disease could set in with so much water.
Well, one thing we haven't done is put that tarp on it very often. We've just taken all the rain. So, and in the spring, this again being cool season grass, it thrives in the spring. The disease problem sets in when it warms up. So as long as we can keep the tarp on the field, off the field, we can battle it.
That's interesting. Trevor Vance, the head groundskeeper here at the K. Listen, good luck with the field this year.
Thank you very much.
I just
much.
Learned something I didn't know about this place. Thanks very much.
All right. Take care.
Again, if you're just joining us this morning, we're coming to you live from Kauffman Stadium. The 2018 season for the Kansas City Royals is about to launch. It's a big day out here. It always is a great Kansas City tradition and a great tradition for KCURs up to date as we come to you live every season now for opening day out here. Today, again, was opening day of sorts for another major league facility in our community, and that's the nonprofit Kansas City Major League Baseball Urban Youth Academy in the 18th and Vine District. This facility features four outdoor fields, and get this, a 38,000 square foot indoor facility, and it's all geared toward giving kids in the inner city an opportunity to play America's pastime. Joining us now to talk about it is Darwin Penny. He's executive director of the academy, and Darwin, welcome, and big day for you. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. We're excited about the opportunity that we have to come alongside the city of Kansas City, Major League Baseball, the Kansas City Royals, and the 18th and Vine community to bring a great opportunity for kids to come out and just enjoy this great game, and then also help them become better socially, academically, and physically.
Well, describe for us what happened this morning at this big ribbon cutting for this new facility, again, down in 18th and Vine. I assume the mayor was there, and what happened? Describe it to us.
So this morning we had our official ribbon cutting ceremony. We've actually occupied our indoor space since the second week of January. So today we start a weekend celebration where we get to actually celebrate with that 18th and Vine, the 3rd District community in Kansas City as a whole. We've had the opportunity to start some basic programming with the kids down there, but we just wanted to be able to celebrate with our community. So we had the mayor, we had people from Major League Baseball, some of the people who contributed heavily to the program, either through their physical resources or financial resources. Dayton Moore, Mr. Glass down there all had something to say today just to thank the community, thank our gracious donors, thank the great philanthropy of Kansas City to say, hey, let's play ball.
Your hope for this facility is what? What's it there to do?
This facility is to bridge the divide that has become a part of our national pastime, where a lot of kids today, simply because of the costs associated with the game, are not able to keep up pace or even many times to have an opportunity to play the game. And so we also want to open their eyes to opportunities that exist in and around the game and around sport that many times don't get highlighted. When you come out here to Kauffman Stadium, the highlight is on the players, but it takes so many other people for a game to take place. When you look at people that are in the baseball operations, the scouts who have driven countless, flew countless miles to discover a player, the player development staff to help them reach the major leagues. When you get here, there's the umpires, front office staff, radio, TV broadcasting.
All this is in the new facility.
So we have the opportunity to expose kids to all of these opportunities, and so that's our job.
So one of the motivations here then is to reopen the pipeline and reestablish the pipeline from kids who are in middle school all the way and get them to the major leagues perhaps someday.
Yeah, but we all know how difficult it is to become a major league player. As a guy who was a former five-year minor league player myself, is a very difficult task. But what
did you play?
I was an outfielder.
Were you?
Yeah.
Were you good?
I was pretty good. They had a guy better than me in Pittsburgh.
What kept you out of the major leagues?
Barry Bonds.
Oh, yeah.
He's a guy named
Barry Bonds.
Yeah.
He was a little better, right?
A little better.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes it's just opportunity and other things that go along. The way we see is that we may not be able to develop all the time world-class athletes, but we can develop world-class citizens. And so that's what the Urban Youth Academy is centered around, giving every kid an opportunity to enjoy the game of baseball and softball and to promote opportunities that exist and to just give them hope for a better life and continuing education.
Now, how many kids do you hope to have involved with this thing?
We hope that over a year's time that we could service anywhere from 800 to 1,000 kids in a particular year through our summer program, through our after-school program that would last year-round, through our open workouts, camps and clinics, and games that we would host there because of the facility that we do have.
Are they actually going to play, like, in a league, and is there going to be standings and teams and the whole thing?
So we will. We'll actually have our first league this summer. It's called the Sandlot League, where we'll have kids from 6 to 9 years old starting them out in T-ball. Then we'll have a middle school league that will take place in the fall. And then next spring we'll have our first middle school softball league. And so there'll be plenty of opportunities for kids to get involved as far as actually playing the game. But a lot of what we'll do will center around fundamental instruction.
And they can, kids who come out here can actually learn broadcasting as well as they can learn how to hit a ball off a tee.
Right. We're excited because one of our teaching classrooms will be our broadcast booth. And so that's one of the things that we hope to develop, is kids learn the other side of the game that, like I said, doesn't always get showcased when you go to a major league game, because everything is centered around the playing of the game itself.
That's pretty cool.
It is.
What a cool opportunity.
Right. And so that's what it's about. It's about giving opportunity. It's about making it a fun place, a safe place that kids can come and freely express themselves.
And Darwin, just a final point. You have this 38,000 square foot indoor facility. What's that going to be used for?
So the indoor facility is one of the things that we were hoping is that kids could experience what a major league player experiences. And so we have a full-size major league infield as well as four batting cages, and then we have four classrooms where we can do some teaching and some instructing. We have a training room where we can showcase the sports medicine department.
Wow.
And when we house our respective full-time and part-time staff there. So that's what that 38,000-square-foot indoor facility gives us.
That's Darwin Penny. He's executive director of the new Kansas City Major League Baseball Urban Youth Academy in the 18th and Vine neighborhood. And, Darwin, listen, good luck. Sounds like a terrific opportunity for a lot of kids.
Thank you for allowing us just to share a little bit of our story here today.
And, again, if you're just joining us, we're coming to you live this morning from the K. The bad guys have just taken the field. The Royals have gone inside. The Chicago White Sox in their black uniforms with gray pants now are out taking a jog around the infield as we speak. For our final segment today, we're now joined by Kurt Nelson. He's director of the Royals Hall of Fame. He joins us every year for these broadcasts. And, Kurt, it's so nice to have you here again.
It's good
Welcome.
To see you again.
Well, last year you honored Yordano Ventura in the Hall of Fame after his passing. This year, just guessing here, it's the 50th anniversary of this team, and you're going to want to commemorate that out there.
Yeah, when you celebrate the 50th season of Royals baseball, it sort of opens you up to almost anything, right? So
yeah.
Every season can be part of your story because it's part of our full story. So we've tried to expand our exhibits to include everything from things we have that date all the way back to 1969 to things that happened last year. You know, Mike Moustakas set the Royals home run, single season home run record last year. We have artifacts from his season on display and things from the 1969 season. So we're going from the alpha and omega of Royals history and looking to get more here in this 50th season.
You know, I'm going to catch you off guard here, but there's been so many great moments during those 50 years. What's Curt Nelson's signature moment during the Royals' first half century of play here?
Gosh, it's hard to pick one. You know, winning a championship is the big thing. So you got to think 85 and 2000. I was lucky enough to be at Game 5 in 2015. One of the great experiences of my life to
sure.
watch the Royals win a World Series. But also in 14, Salvador Perez's hit in the wild card game, that ranks right up there. And I would say another one that ranks up there is George Brett's home run in Game 3 of the 1980 American League Championship Series, which really propelled us to our first American League pennant, finally beating the Yankees in our fourth attempt and getting an American League pennant for Kansas City. Those would be some of my favorites. I can't pick one, you know. I could never pick one. There's so many of them.
There's so many. I imagine you have so much stuff in storage, Kurt. Can you rotate stuff through as the course of the season unwinds here?
Yeah, over the course of the last couple of years, you know, we've been doing the Royals Hall of Fame now as a building, as a, you know, an archive for about 10 years. And, of course, there's been a lot of great history in those 10 years. So we've been able to accumulate a lot more artifacts than we would have had at the mm-hmm. beginning. We don't have as many from you know, the earlier days. We have a few. And we try to get them all the important ones upstairs. But, yeah, and we've tried to... We're limited square footage-wise, but we're trying to be creative in ways of displaying them so we can get more of the items. It used to be that there was really all the good stuff, as I would say, was on display. And now there's some good stuff that ends up in the storage room that we're trying to make more room for upstairs.
What's the single most popular item you've got out there? Is there one that sort of stands out, the crowds linger in front of the most?
It really has to be the World Series trophies. I mean,
okay.
they still yeah. drive the, especially, you know, the 15 one, the 85 one, of course, for us older folks, it means a lot because if you were around at that time, you know how special that season was. But the 15 still has such recency to it. And there's a whole younger generation of Royals fans that became Royals fans really through the process of that
sure.
championship team being built. So that trophy is really... It's all of ours, but it's really sort of theirs, and it's fun to see it in their eyes when they're able to have that sort of encounter with it.
Imagine that the challenge for you is to find things of interest that go beyond balls and bats.
Yeah, you try to. There's a lot of balls and bats in there, and equipment is, you know, but you have paper artifacts and things like that. That some of it can be very fascinating. There's a letter from Stuart Symington, the senator from
sure.
the state of Missouri, who was sort of strong-arming the American League owners back in November of 1967 to make sure that Kansas City would get an expansion team
oh, really?
And that it would happen quickly.
Wow.
And it's a fun letter to read because it's a little bit of passive aggressive in the letter about thank you for doing what I asked you to do.
Well, that's Curt Nelson. He's director of the Royals Hall of Fame. Kurt, it's always great to have you here.
It's
thanks
great
again
to have
for taking
you here.
Some time. You bet. You can find all of our previous programs online at kcur.org/up-to-date, including yesterday's about keeping kids safe from measles. Tomorrow, school funding in Kansas state lawmakers are struggling with it. They'll join us to talk about their priorities in paying for public education in the Sunflower State. Again, if you're just joining us, the Royals are off the field. The White Sox are on. We're saying goodbye here from Kauffman Stadium here on opening day. Our show is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Kathleen Pointer, and Claire Verbeck. I'm Steve Kraske, live from the K, and you are up to date.